Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Famed novelist Henry James once wrote that Isabella Stewart Gardner is not a woman. She's a locomotive with a Pullman car attached. Quite a description for the woman New York Society magazine in 1887 called the brightest, breeziest woman in Boston. Now, James' words were candidly, but we imagine warmly written. The two were in fact close friends, and their relationship is the subject of a new exhibition at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum called Henry James and American Painting.
James's work is often very noted as being painterly. He painted portraits of people on the page with words, and then he was great friends with visual artists like John Singer Sargent, who was one of the greatest portraitists in paint on canvas of his time.
This is Christina Nielsen, the William and Leah Porvoo curator at the Gardner Museum.
Isabella married into a noted Boston family, and Henry James also had deep New England roots. His family were Irish immigrants. They'd been here for several generations. They knew each other because their social circles overlapped. Henry and Isabella have a friendship that actually spans 30 years and 27 different addresses between Europe and the United States. They're both inveterate travelers. They grew up traveling, and they continue to travel their whole adult lives. For Isabella, James provided entree into certain artistic circles. Mm-hmm. So it's through Henry James that she meets John Singer Sargent, and it's through Henry James that she meets Whistler.
Whistler, Sargent, John Lafarge, an admirable circle to run with, indeed.
The really important thing to note about this group, whether it's Henry James or Isabella or James McNeill Whistler or John Singer Sargent, they all had roots in New England, even though Whistler had grown up in St. Petersburg and really wanted people to believe he was Russian and not American. They found a great deal of liberty and freedom from social constraints very much in place in New England by traveling the globe and meeting up with other like-minded individuals. But they don't belong in the European society either, so they're kind of anthropologists between the old world and the new world. Yeah. And they're exercising personal freedoms in different places that they couldn't at home.
James and Gardner's shared adventures fostered a unique intimacy and affection between the two. It runs like a joyful thread in their 30 years' worth of correspondence.
We have in the Gardner's collection 100 letters that James wrote to Isabella, and you can sort of see them going all over the world but staying in really close communication. And you can really see over the course of 30 years how their friendship develops, because he goes from at first addressing her very formally as my dear Mrs. Gardner, Mrs. John L. Gardner, my dear Mrs. Gardner, to Dona Isabella, or even dear wild and wandering friend, which again is indicative of their shared wanderlust. But in these letters, just as James paints images on the pages of his novels, he's almost painting with his handwriting on these pieces of paper, because we see him using up a whole sheet of the paper, and then because he's not done with the ideas in his head, he turns the sheet sideways and scribbles in the margins and then across the top of the page too. And I was really struck as I was rereading these in preparation for the exhibition by how he's clearly going back and editing. So he writes a whole page. He'll write several pages. He'll write in the margins of the pages. And then, like my school-age child, he'll put that little caret note in between lines and add adjectives. So his writing is already really beautiful, but he's making it even kind of more evocative and flowery. You know, it's one of those moments where, like, when you see a Hollywood star and you realize, oh, you're smaller than I thought you were on the screen. I had the same impression when I looked at these letters and started reading them. Often they contain really kind of mundane information. Mm-hmm. Like, when you come to visit me in my house outside London, take the 2:15 train from Paddington Station and I'll have a driver pick you up. And then as I learned more about the postal system in the 19th century, mail was delivered twice a day. So literally sometimes he'll send her a letter in the morning that says, I'm going to see you this afternoon, but I just wanted to say tomorrow night at dinner, I'll be bringing such and such as my guest. I'll tell you this again in the afternoon, but be forewarned. And I began to realize that these letters in a way are almost like texts, you know, like they were sending kind of constant communication to each other no matter where they were.
But can I just point out this letter, for example, from 1898?
Yes.
It's hard to actually read his writing, but you've done us the favor of telling us a little bit about what's in it, where James is recalling one of the acquisitions that Gardner made of Titian's Europa.
Yes, that's
and comparing
right.
her to the painting.
That's right. So he's often very flattering to Gardner. I think she ate it up. I mean, I think she really loved those compliments. And I think also early in their relationship, when he is treating her very formally, I don't know what he actually thought of her. Because he writes stories about rapacious American collectors, and he's very down. But by the end of his life, he's actually praising her and saying, you won't understand the spirit of old Boston unless you go to visit the museum that Gardner has created.
And as true friends do, they wrote not just about their joyful wanderings, but about their personal tragedies as well. Curator Christina Nielsen points out a separate letter written on colored paper.
I love this letter written on a gorgeous blue paper, but you can see the borders are outlined in black. That is to indicate that he's in mourning. So you not only put on black clothes, but you used the stationery lined in black. His sister Alice has just died. And he suffers, you know, the loss of his sister and also his mother, and he writes to Isabella about both of those things. And this, to me, is particularly pertinent because Alice and Henry and their brother William are all buried in a cemetery in Cambridge, right next to each other. So really kind of they had these, you know, Boston roots. They traveled the world, and then in death, they're here again.
Alice and William and Henry are buried at the Cambridge Cemetery, just down the road from Mount Auburn Cemetery. The letters aren't the only evidence of the cherished relationship between Henry James and Isabella Stewart Gardner. On the exhibit wall across from the letters is an interior shot of the Palazzo Barbaro in Venice, a famous patrician home. The Curtis family, fellow Boston expats, owned the Palazzo beginning in the 19th century.
Isabella Stewart Gardner was also great friends with the Curtises, and she rented from them that palace in Venice for several summers.
This is the Palazzo Barbaro.
The Palazzo Barbaro, and she invites James to come and be her guest for a fortnight at that palazzo.
Is it? It's what the palazzo next door
yes,
is modeled
that's
after?
Right, in many ways. So Isabella seems to have sort of come alive on her visits to Europe. She's visits the Curtises, she stays at the Palazzo Barbaro, and she recreates a palace on the Fenway, which is our historic building. So we have this great courtyard, which everyone is familiar with here at the Gardner. In many ways, it evokes the inner courtyard of the Palazzo Barbaro.
And did Henry James also use it as the backdrop?
He did.
One of his books?
So Henry James, it's funny, his creative process, you see him looking at real life people and places like the Palazzo Barbaro, and then they inspire. So, for example, Wings of the Dove, the great tragic heroine, Millie Thiel, in many ways may be modeled in part, and only in part because it's art,
right.
On Isabella, because Millie wears this famous strand of pearls, which Isabella wears. But the Palazzo Barbaro clearly is the palazzo in the Wings of the Dove.
Art imitating life. In fact, Henry James sent his publisher the last pages of the Aspern papers from the halls of the Palazzo. But Isabella Stewart Gardner didn't just collect art. She made her own. A small area in the exhibition is reserved to showcase a few of her many travel photographs.
She has, because the after 1891, Kodak invents a Brownie camera. She had one, and she's a shutterbug, so she's constantly taking her own photos. This is her photo album from Venice, and we have two images here of an upstairs library in the Palazzo Barbaro that Gardner turned into a bedroom for Henry James when he stayed with her. And you can see the bed here with a mosquito net draped around it. He said, He writes to Mrs. Curtis, the real owner of the Palazzo, and says, your library is magnificent, and you haven't really lived in the Barbaro if you haven't spent the night in this library. And it's just such a magnificent setting, he said, as long as you don't lose your socks. Is it such a big, gorgeous room that he had to be careful,
a
I guess,
paradise
about,
of a bedroom.
A paradise of a bedroom, exactly.
It's amazing. It also further reveals or further sort of allows us to appreciate Gardner's curatorial sensibilities.
Absolutely.
I mean, she's collecting the entire story around this moment, around this slice of their world.
Exactly. Henry James writes novels, and he evokes the Palazzo Barbaro on the page. She creates galleries and evokes the Palazzo Barbaro in 3D.
Of course, Gardner didn't just create art through her collection. She also commissioned it for herself, sometimes of herself. There is one painting in one room that truly dominates the James and Gardner exhibition. It is the iconic portrait of Gardner, the 1888 John Singer Sargent painting of Gardner, draped in a V-necked black dress, strand of pearls, mouth slightly open, as if Gardner is daring her viewer to tiptoe with her to the edge of the 19th century's tolerance for titillation. I ask Christina Nielsen, why is this painting here with the Henry James collection?
With this portrait, Isabella and I think Sargent show how far ahead of their time they are. This image was absolutely scandalous when it was painted in the 1880s and when it goes on display here in Boston. Isabella visited Sargent at his Paris studio. She knew about a famous painting he had created, a portrait of a Parisian society woman who became called Madame X because her portrait was so scandalous. And Gardner wants her own version of that. So she is represented in a dress that is very low-cut, very form-fitting, but also very modern in its presentation, much more so than if you see a photo of her and the dress that she would have worn, types of dresses she wore every day. Yes, it's a kind of a ball gown, but it's also about 20 to 30 years ahead of its time in terms of decorum and what a proper woman ought to be wearing. The background, too, is a historic textile from our collection, but it gives a kind of abstract surface pattern decoration that really foreshadows what turn-of-the-century artists like Klimt and others will be doing.
Uh-huh.
So if you look at this painting, you get the sense that there are certain outliers in terms of artists who are pushing the envelope. And while there may be now kind of notion that James and Gardner were very much holding on to the mores of the 19th century, in fact, they, to me, are a bridge between the 19th century and modernism in the 20th century, which is going to hit hard about a generation after them.
I can see that when you talk about the Sargent that way, but it's funny because I'm not sure I would have thought of Henry James as also being of that.
No, exactly, but he's also moving the novel along in ways that set the stage for, you know, what's going to come, even at the end of his lifetime, Joyce with Ulysses, Virginia Woolf. I don't think that group of writers would have gotten to where they did as quickly as they did had James not kind of moved things along for them.
So by the end of their, you know, of their 30 years,
mm-hmm.
what was it that sort of the one was providing the other and vice versa that really made their friendship special?
I think they recognized in each other that creative imagination, sort of desire to express the greatest sort of limits of what a human being can do. And so I think James goes from not quite knowing what Isabella is up to really feeling that she has accomplished something great.
This is a very, very amazing and compelling exhibition. So
thank you.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming.
Christina Nielsen is the William and Leah Pourvu Curator at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. The exhibit, Henry James, an American Painting, is on view at the Gardner through January 21st. Well, that's it for today, everyone. In this season of renewal and light, I bid you happy holidays. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, wishing you also peace this weekend. This is Radio Boston.